Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now, the landmark Roe v. Wade legislation in the 1970s brought women in the US the federal right to abortion, and tomorrow marks 1 year since that was overturned by the US Supreme Court. Now, individual US states can ban or severely restrict women's access to abortion. Earlier this year, the New York Times reported that most abortions are now banned in 14 states, including Texas, North Dakota and West Virginia. So how is this changing the discourse in US politics? How much of an issue will it be in upcoming elections, and what further fallout can we expect? I'm joined now by Marion McKeown, US correspondent with the Business Post. Good morning to you, Marion.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Taking it back a year ago when Roe v. Wade was overturned in the Supreme Court, this was a decision that had probably been an election issue in every presidential election up until now. It marked a big victory for US conservatives, maybe, and vindicated the choice or the backing by evangelicals of Donald Trump in terms of loading the Supreme Court and getting this overturned.
That's right. But it's been a bit of a poison chalice in a lot of ways for the Republican Party in particular. We saw in the 2022 midterms, they didn't do nearly as well as was expected. They lost a seat in the Senate, and they only picked up a handful in Congress compared with 2018, when Donald Trump lost about 40 seats in his midterm election. And that was even with Biden, with inflation rampant and lots of, his approval ratings were very, very low at the time. So I think that the Democratic Party, and Biden in particular, is looking at making this again a big issue for 2024. But, you know, that's the political strategist end of it. The sort of real end of it is that the Supreme Court a year ago really unleashed a sort of a form of legal chaos on the United States, because what they said was, we are going to go from a uniform regulation that applies to all the states to basically a free-for-all where you can all just do whatever you want and don't come crying to us basically if you don't like it. So we have situations where, for example, they range from, we'll take Oklahoma as an example. In Oklahoma, there's an absolute ban on abortion. There's a ban, and even if the mother's life is in danger. And in that case, if a doctor performs an abortion, he has to provide an affirmative defense in court to show that if he hadn't provided that abortion, the mother would have died. Now, that is a huge burden to put on any doctor, and it's also a violation of the basic tenets of criminal law, where you are innocent until proven guilty. You know, it's making him say, well, I had to do this or say it, and if I didn't, this would have happened. And, you know, it's, and then you go to places, of course, like California across at the other extreme, where new legislation has been introduced to strengthen the rights, women's rights to have abortion, and to make sure that it cannot be impacted by what the federal court did. So at the moment, you have 13 or 14 states where abortion is banned outright. You have Wisconsin where it's not banned outright, but where there are no abortion facilities, so women in Wisconsin cannot obtain abortions. You have other states then, like Texas, where you have a 6 weeks rule, and then you have other states, about 20 blue states, where the rights have remained the same, the abortion rights are actually being strengthened. So it's a really confusing situation in the states. It's affecting poor women the most, because wealthier women can afford to travel to different states. So if you've got enough money and you live in Oklahoma, you can travel to California or wherever. If you're a poor woman on a minimum wage, you know, it's much more difficult. America is very angry. It feels like a very unequal application of the laws. And there are marches this weekend, both pro-choice who are protesting the Supreme Court decision, and then the pro-life groups who are seeing this as a huge victory, and they're having a big rally at the Lincoln Monument in Washington, D.C., and a big gala in D.C. tomorrow evening as well, where the women's march groups have events happening all around the country, including in North Carolina, where Vice President Kamala Harris is speaking.
But going back a year ago, this before the complexity of the outcome of overturning Roe v. Wade was known, it was greeted fairly vociferously by both sides, as you say, the pro-life side in celebration of it, the pro-choice side I suppose mourning wouldn't be too strong a word to use for it. But where do both sides go for now? Because for the pro-life side, they're interested in advancing this cause further.
That's right. I suppose they will need to keep voting for very strongly anti-abortion politicians. Now, Mike Pence, it's interesting because we now have, as you know, Colin, we have about 10 or 11 Republican candidates in the field. None of them will really say where they are on with abortion because this is not a winning topic to say. Mike Pence is the only one who's come out and said, I support having absolutely no abortion in America, having a total ban in all 50 states. But most of the others are skirting around the issue. For example, Nikki Haley is saying, oh, well, I'm not going to talk about where I stand on abortion and at what point until Joe Biden talks about something else that's totally unconnected, whatever it is. And so it's a very tricky electoral issue because, you know, the polls show that it's just speaking at this from a legal perspective, regardless of, and, you know, with respect for both sides and their opinions, but from a legal perspective, to overturn a 50-year legal precedent with no reason to do so, there was no compelling reason, there was no new evidence, no new medical information introduced, is very bad law because you upset settled law and then you create chaos especially by turning it back to all the states to have, as I said, to do whatever they want. You're just creating legal chaos and legal uncertainty, and that is never good. It's never good for ordinary people when they don't really know what the law is or when the law's in a state of flux, particularly on such a vitally important issue. So I think at the moment, 70% of Americans favour having abortion, particularly Americans favour having abortion up to possibly 15 to 20 weeks. After that, you know, and it really is understandable that Americans, people don't want late-term abortions if they can be avoided. They would prefer that it would be within a specific period. And I think that if that is allowed, most people, not just women, most men as well, support having abortion and having abortion access free to all women, whereas now about 2 in 5 women in America cannot obtain an abortion in their state. So it's a political issue, but there's nothing to answer your question. The Supreme Court has decided. So unless the only thing that will happen, and this is not going to happen, I could tell you, would be that if Joe Biden were re-elected and he'd said, okay, we're going to introduce legislation and we're going to codify Roe v. Wade and we're going to introduce law that says that, basically every woman has a right to abortion in the United States up to 15 weeks, for example, but they will never get the votes for that in Congress, so right. It won't happen.
Well, abortion, I suppose, it was an issue on which there was a point of difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. China, they would be more ad idem on this because the tensions that arose during Donald Trump's time in the White House have continued into Joe Biden's time right up into this week, where after initially trying to, I suppose, calm relations between the two sides, Joe Biden turned around and described Xi Jinping as a dictator, which has injected further tensions into the relationship.
You know, I feel this is a bit of an artificial outrage, performative outrage by China, because the embassy in Washington has complained, etc. Now, you know, it was a thoughtless thing to say. You know, when Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, had just left. Good job he didn't say it before he arrived, but he had just left China, where there was, you know, nothing concrete was achieved, but there were talks about talks. But the success and China's apparent willingness to come some way to meet America was demonstrated in little optics. Like, for example, Blinken had a picture taken with Xi Jinping, and it was taken in a hall, the long hall, which is reserved for very, very important photo ops. Usually it's, you know, the Chinese president with another world leader. And the fact that a Secretary of State was photographed with him there, you know, in diplomatic circles, that sends, you know, big sort of signals that, yes, you know, we want to improve things. Yes, we're on board. But, you know, Antony Blinken went to the table with three asks, basically. America is really concerned that all of the raw materials, the chemicals for fentanyl production, which is made in Mexico, are shipped from China. And this is having a devastating effect on America in terms of addiction, in terms of deaths from overdoses. So they wanted to see if they could do something about that, as in have an opening shot. Also, of course, Ukraine, and then also Taiwan. But China, and climate as well. China wants to talk about Taiwan. So you leave us alone in Taiwan. That's our business. Back off there. And, you know, so they didn't really come. You know, they put out a talks about talks. Yes, it's good to meet, etc. There is hope that Janet Yellen will go there later in the year, and also the Commerce Secretary. And what America and China really are working towards is having a summit with the two presidents, with Biden and Xi. So that would be the ultimate goal. But even with that, you know, will it be a success? Will it not? They have to keep talking. At the moment, as we know, Modi, the big red carpet is being turned out in Washington for India, because it now has the biggest population in the world, 1.4 billion. It's the world's biggest democracy, notwithstanding his slide towards authoritarianism. And America is all about wooing India at the moment.
And a regional rival of China, of course.
Absolutely. And that is the game plan.
Hunter Biden, Marion, has been a source of controversy, a thorn in Joe Biden's side for quite some time. He's, of course, the president's son. What happened this week and what trouble is it causing?
Well, what happened this week was that Hunter Biden has been investigated by the U.S. attorney for Delaware, who was a Trump appointee called David Weiss. And this investigation has been going on since 2018, looking into multiple things, looking into his business dealings, looking into his tax issues, and also looking into the fact that he apparently purchased a gun. And he did, in fact, sometime around 2018, when by his own admission, he was addicted to multiple different drugs. And that is illegal in America. You cannot buy a gun if you are abusing drugs, basically. It's one of the few gun control laws really that are universal within the states. Now, we discovered that Hunter Biden didn't pay his taxes for 2 years in a row. He made about $1.5 million each year, and they went unpaid. There was a $450,000 lien on him in Delaware and Washington, D.C. Now, it was decided that they would be he could plead guilty to misdemeanor charges there. This is not unusual. Despite all the outrage, if his name were Joe Smith, it would probably be treated in a very similar manner. The reason being that he paid back all the money that he owed. He paid his taxes. He paid penalties. And also, there was no intent to evade. No, it's very difficult to establish intent in any tax cases, which is why they're so rarely brought as felonies, as serious crimes, because you have to show that somebody deliberately tried not to pay them. Like things like, you know, putting a shell company overseas, whatever. Right. Hunter Biden, by his own admission, was a total mess. He was a drug addict then, and he just wasn't paying attention to anything, and he wasn't paying his taxes. Right. So I think on that basis, they said, okay, misdemeanor on the gun charge. It would have been a felony charge, but they're allowing a diversion. He'll be okay on that.
There we have to leave it. And meanwhile, the Trump soap opera continues. But Marion McKeown, Business Post America correspondent, thanks for joining us. Back in a minute.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.